Welcome to my monthly podcast series titled Becoming a Sage. My name is Jan Fried, but you can call me Dr. Jan. I blog about leading, living, saging, or positive aging. I'm passionate about helping people get from where they are to where they want to be, particularly in the second half of life. I also say that I'm out to retire the word retirement. We are not retiring, but moving on to something else. And I believe it takes time and intentional thought to successfully move on to what's next in life. Today, I'm going to interview Dr. Robert Weber. Bob, as I'm going to call him, Bob is assistant professor of psychology part-time at Harvard Medical School and an associate in psychiatry at Massachusetts General Hospital. A former Jesuit, Bob was the recipient of the 2014 FORSA Award given by the American Society on Aging's Forum on Religion, Spirituality, and Aging. The book he co-authored with Carol Orsborn, The Spirituality of Age, A Seeker's Guide to Growing Older, received the 2015 Nautilus Gold Award in the category of Aging Consciously. For more information about Bob, please see his bio attached to this podcast. I've attended Bob and Carol's workshop, actually, at the Saging International Conference. And his work has been, their work has been really important to me as a seeker. So welcome to the series, Bob.
Thank you, Jan. Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, well, great. Sometime in the future, I hope to interview Carol also. She's on my list, but I really appreciate being able to tie you down for this interview. And I love just even the subtitle of your book, A Seeker's Guide to Growing Older. I mean, honestly, I think we should all be seekers. So I'm just going to start off with, what are the current dominant stereotypes of aging? I mean, our listeners may know, but I think it's good to just get it out on the table that this whole idea of aging or positive aging is not an easy thing in our society.
It's not. The dominant stereotypes, as they have emerged earlier on, and some continue to be prevalent currently, first is disengagement theory. This is kind of the rocking chair vision of aging. Your life's over, sit back, kick up your feet, and retire and relax. You said you wanted to, get rid of retirement. That's really what that's about. It's about pulling out and getting out of the society and the culture that you've been so actively involved in and contributed to. The second predominant theory has been the activity theory. It's almost a what we call in psychology a counterphobic response. In other words, I'm scared of sitting in the rocking chair and being idle. So what am I going to do? I'm going to ramp up my activities. I'm going to do everything I can. Exercise, climb Mount Everest, get involved in a book club, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Keeping busy, busy, busy.
Uh-huh.
And, the model, I think, offers something in the sense that if you can do certain things and enjoy them, do them. If you're doing them to prove that you're not getting older, in a sense, you're not accepting an important aspect of your life process, which is aging. The other predominant model, let's call it the Cleopatra syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
You know who she was, Jan. She was the queen of denial.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the denial of aging. We don't want to look at it. We want to deny that it's even happening. Although, when you think about it, aging begins when egg met sperm. That's when aging began.
Yeah.
Not at birth, but even that early. As soon as that happened, you started to grow older.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the predominant theories. And Carol and I, through conversations we began at an ASA, American Society on Aging conference in 2011, really began to, we both had questions like, is that all there is? Is that all there is, my friend? Then let's keep dancing and break out the booze. Well, we didn't want to sort of break out the booze in order to forget that we're aging. We had begun already, each of us, to experience aging as holding a lot of promises and a lot of potential for gifts. And we began to see aging as a time of going on the spiritual path in a much more conscious way. You mentioned our book receiving the Gold Award in the category,
yes,
Aging Consciously. Aging Consciously. And that's what this is about. It is about aging in a very conscious way,
yeah,
not denying it, not running away from it, but being aware of what is this time of life offering me. So those, I think, are models we're looking at.
Yeah, excellent. That's a great point. Well, let's get to your book a little bit because I want to make sure we talk about it. But what is your book offering as an alternative to growing older?
Okay. We're not offering an alternative to growing older. We're offering an opportunity to see the growth that is inherent in the aging process. It's not in spite of growing older that one grows. It's because of growing older.
Oh, I love that distinction. Yes.
That one grows. So we are not off. We're offering the what we ourselves went through. You know, it's not a self-help book. We're not saying, look, we've got the answers. Just read our book, do exactly what we did or what you think we're telling you to do, and everything, you'll have smooth sailing from here on. It's not a self-help book. This is really a book that invites people to become seekers themselves. He or she becomes a seeker in this book. And what we invite you to do is to do what we did, which is to ask questions. Ask 25 questions of yourself. Don't look to our answers for your answers, but use ours as exemplary of the process. And Carol and I come at these slightly differently. She's a woman, I'm a man. She's Jewish, I'm Catholic Christian. She's an expert scholar in religious history and the history and critical theory of religion, and I'm a clinical psychologist. So we have different takes on this. And everybody who comes to try to answer these questions, Jan, will have his or her own unique way of answering them. And I think what we try to encourage people to do is be questers. I mean, the word question comes from the same root as seeker.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, is that what you mean by a seeker, a seeker's guide, having to do with the, you know, it's about the questions because different people are going to have different answers.
Exactly. Exactly. It's about grappling with the question in your own unique way, in the midst of your own unique circumstances that you are confronting as you're aging. The ones that you're pleased with, the ones that are discouraging you, maybe even depressing you, use all of those to stay with the questions. What good is the fact that my memory is not as good as it used to be? What good is the fact that my friends around me are dying? What good is it that I am not contributing in ways I used to or can't do the things I used to? So you have to be willing to say, let me look a little deeper into this. Kind of like the kid who always wanted a pony and his parents, were fed up with his requests at a certain point, and they finally said, we'll teach him what a pony's really like. And they put a pile of horse poop in his bedroom.
Uh-huh.
And they let him go in, and he sees it, and he starts digging in it. And they're going, oh, my God, what's he doing? And he turns and looks at them, and he says, I know there's a pony in here somewhere.
No, I get it. I get it. No, that's excellent. Well, you know, it's so interesting because, you know, you've already pointed out, you know, some of the dominant stereotypes of aging, and they tend to be negative. It's hard in our society, you know, to be positive about it. And, you know, when one, if you're confronted by loss, meaning, mortality, we can't do what we used to do, you know, can we still have a positive attitude about this?
I think we can. It takes work, though. You have to be willing to experience the fact you can't do what you used to do, the fact that you are down some days, your mood shifts, mm-hmm. the fact that you're having health issues, that you're having cognitive issues, that you're experiencing those losses. What are they teaching you? Now, I think one of the things that aging has helped me to become is more, not an optimist anymore, but an optalist. And it's helped me to become not a pessimist, but a pessilist. And you're thinking, what is that?
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, tell us about that.
Well, I'm a neologist. I've been a neologist, which is a word creator.
Okay.
I like to create new words that express my experience. So each word, I take optimist and I blend it with realist, hence optilist.
Interesting.
I'm optimistic. So when something is going very well for me, you know, our tendency as human beings is to want it to continue that way in perpetuity. But we know that's not going to be the case. I may be happy today. Tomorrow, the weather may be bad and my mood shifts and I'm not happy. So we need to be optimistic. That is, things are great, but, you know, they ain't always going to stay this way. Now, the other side is pessimistic.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, people, and I've been pessimistic at times where you just dig the hole deeper for yourself. And about aging, there's plenty of opportunity to dig the hole deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And pun intended there too, because that's where we wind up, right? In the hole ultimately.
Right.
But we can do that, but we can also say, well, things are bad, but is there a pony in here?
Mm-hmm.
Is there something good in what I'm experiencing as very much conducing to my pessimism?
Yeah.
Maybe there's something else here.
Yeah, that's a really powerful way to look at it. And it kind of leads me to the next question I had, because the title of your book, The Spirituality of Age, I had, you know, I came up with this question, you know, how is aging a spiritual growth or mystical experience? And what are some of the spiritual opportunities inherent in growing older?
Well, I think in order to answer that question, Jan, I need to say or speak to what Carol and I came up with as our guiding sense of what aging is, our conception.
Okay, great.
It's not completely unique to us. It actually has been expressed by many people, but one person who really rang my bell and Carol's was an Indian Jesuit priest named Anthony DeMello. And he wrote a number of books, a quite remarkable man. But he said, here's what spirituality is. Spirituality is first waking up. Second, spirituality is getting rid of illusions. Third, spirituality is never being at the mercy of any event, thing, or person. Fourthly, he said, spirituality is discovering the diamond mine, the gem you are, that is, that you find deep inside yourself. He added that religion is intended to cultivate the conditions for spiritual growth in those four ways. So that's what spirituality is. So we could say, well, how does aging wake me up? Well, you know, for me, now I can't do the things I did when I was a younger man. I'm going to be 71 June 28th. When I was younger, I was athletic. I was exuberant. I could be out there. My mind was sharp as a tack. I met you 20 years before. I remember your name when I meet you now. Now my memory's more slippage in it. And I can't run like I used to, jump like I used to, do all the things I did when I played football, baseball, and basketball through, you know, my early life. So what it's awakened me to the fact that I'm limited now.
Mm-hmm.
And what is my limitation teaching me? What is it helping me to understand?
Mm-hmm.
And what are the illusions I had, the illusions that I would be young forever, you know, that I would be able to be just remarkably able to deny everything that was true, but I didn't want to see it, and create illusions for myself, untruths for myself. I can't do that anymore. The reality is too present and too harsh at times. And I don't like it when it's harsh. And yet those are the moments that have grown me the most.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah.
You know, it's and as far as being at the mercy of God, who isn't at the mercy of people and events and things at times? The people I work with in my psychotherapeutic practice, it's often very similar to my own family, where there were and still are sometimes rifts that seem irreparable. And people don't even remember why they now dislike the person, continue to dislike the person. I can't remember what happened, but the person, I can't trust them. And those are the things that really ruin our capacity to live fully, freely, because we're stuck in anger, resentment. We're stuck in the past. And the past is just history. The past is history. It ain't no more. The question is, can we now live in the present and not worry about the future either? I'm going to die someday. I worry about that in a preoccupied way. I'm not going to be able to be as free to live now. Now, that's not to say that my consciousness about death doesn't help me to live well now, because I say, I've only got so much time. So the present is, as the African musician Baba Olatunji said, he said, what is the present? The present is a gift. That's why they call it a present.
Yeah. No, I like that. Yes.
So that's what we're trying to do, is cultivate a sense of spirituality that's has some resonance with those four ways of viewing it. What's waking you up, for example, Jan? What illusions are you getting rid of slowly but surely? What things have you been at the mercy of but are no longer at the mercy of? And do you look at yourself when you look in the mirror in the morning? Do you say, God, what a great woman?
Those are, I'm telling you, that is really cutting to the chase. I mean, that just really, that's wonderful. I love it. And so building off of that, what spiritual opportunities are inherent? I mean, I understand that this is kind of the base that you guys defined and work off of. Can you give some examples of spiritual opportunities in growing older, either from a personal standpoint or those you've witnessed in others?
Well, I've certainly witnessed it slowly but surely in others, but I'll speak rather personally about this. For the last 3 years, I have been going through major, major health problems. In fact, you mentioned I got the ASA award, you know, in 2014. Yes. I could not attend the conference and receive the award. I had Carol and another dear friend and colleague of mine, Jane Marie Thibault, accept the award for me, because I was walking my dog on a cold February night, and I hit black ice, crashed to the ground, and shattered my right shoulder. And inner cuff was torn in four places. Torn. On Valentine's Day of that year, I had surgery. I said to my wife before Valentine's Day, I said, Pamela, I said, let's... you know, I've got a proposal for something different to celebrate Valentine's Day this year. And she looks at me and she knows I'm a kibitzer. She said, what's that? I said, how about surgery? So that day, that morning, she spent with me getting surgery on my rotator cuff. That was our Valentine's Day celebration. So
I've had that surgery and it's not fun.
It is not fun. Would I have bought a ticket and said that's going to grow me? No. But what it began to teach me, and I didn't even, I couldn't even at that point, Jan, articulate to you what it was teaching me. But I knew something had shifted. I had slowed down. I stopped being a doobie. I became more of a BB. That is, instead of thinking that life is about doing, you know, I had been a human doing. That began the transition into my becoming a human being. Finally, I could slow down and consider, well, how do I want to spend my time, live my life? What is most important? What and who matter most to me? And how can I give expression to that? Now, that was followed on by other problems, like a total left hip replacement.
Wow.
That happened last June 20th, a year ago.
Right.
Now, I had to wait to have that done because they discovered prostate cancer.
Oh, Bob. This is too much.
Well, that's what it felt like.
Yeah.
But the point of the story, though, is what opportunities? You asked the question, what opportunities? Believe me, I would not have bought the admission ticket to have the prostate surgery or the hip surgery or the shoulder surgery or the carpal tunnel surgeries. And I've been a really healthy guy all my life. The last 3 years, though, it shifted. And what I've discovered, though, was that something else was being born inside me. And I began to appreciate the illusions that I was carrying within me in a more profound way, and that aging was slowly dismantling. The first illusion was immortality. You know, I really hadn't thought about death as much. I had thought about it in the past, but not with the focus I developed in light of these circumstances. So mortality, immortality, invulnerability, and complete independence. Those were three grand illusions that I carried around inside me. And we psychologists talk about the unconscious. I was not conscious of them in the way that I became conscious of them because of what I was going through health-wise. All of a sudden, they couldn't hold up anymore. I had to start grieving them. And I thought, oh, I'm mortal. Mm-hmm. You know, Atul Gawande, this surgeon from Boston, has this wonderful book called Being Mortal.
No, I've read it. I've read it.
Well, that's what it felt like. Yep. I was mortal.
Yep.
I was so vulnerable. I was vulnerable. And I was also not completely independent. My wife took care of me. All the medical staff took care of me. My physical therapist took care of me. Our friends took care of me and us. You know, all of a sudden, something I had wanted to be all my life, completely independent, was shattered. Now, you can say, well, what's the value in losing those three grand illusions? Becoming mortal, vulnerable, and dependent. I call them the three C's that took over in their place. I'll start with the last, with the independence. All of a sudden, I began to appreciate much more profoundly and became, I think, much more attuned to community. I was appreciative of community and aware of how we are all so interconnected. You know, when I had my eggs, you know, for my breakfast today, you know, the chicken had to cooperate.
Yeah.
But not only the chicken, the person who collected the eggs, the person who got them clean, boxed them, brought them, delivered them, and then, you know, checked me out at the line at Trader Joe's when I bought them. I am part of a community, and that is essential for my life and well-being. Also, when vulnerability became the more the leitmotif, I began to become more compassionate. I thought I was, and my friends would have said, Bob, that guy's really a compassionate guy. I was nowhere near as compassionate previously as I am now, because I have suffered what a lot of people suffered. And when you see people suffering what you have not suffered, the first inclination is to push away, not to get close. But all of a sudden, there I was, just like everybody else.
That's a good point.
So that was compassion. And then the experience with the mortality, I began to experience more of a sense of really comfort. I began to relax into it and to think, okay, I am mortal and I can live with this. It is not the end, it's a beginning. So those dimensions were the gifts. That was the pony in the poop.
Mm-hmm. No, that's excellent. I mean, those are great examples of the shift. You know, yes. There's a shift in each of those. Yes.
Major, major yeah. shift.
Well, and Bob, you know what? Our time is going so fast here. You and Carol, you've done so much work in this area, and I know you've given talks and workshops. What's your greatest learning that you'd like to share with our listeners?
That, as Yogi Berra would have said, life's not over till it's over. There's life even when you think all you're seeing is limitation and increased diminishment. That the opportunity is there to become more fully alive, to become an even better human being. When I was going through all that stuff health-wise over the last 3 years, my friends would say, you know, my good Catholic friends, we'll pray for you, Bob. That's the custom in Catholicism. We'll pray for you. And I thought to myself, what are they going to pray? Oh, that it all goes well. The surgery's good. That he comes through it. He has good health afterwards. I said, you know what I want you to pray for, in my regard, pray that whatever I go through, I will become a better human being.
That is
A man.
powerful.
You know, that's what I want. And I think that's what we have the chance to do, is finally maybe become the human beings, the true individuals that are deeply inside us, the gem inside us that we are. When we look in the mirror, say, and it's not to say ignore the good, the bad and the ugly within us, because believe me, we all have bad and ugly too. But the whole story sums up as a wonderful, and I guess the way I would put it in the Judeo-Christian tradition, we are imago deis. We are made in the image of God.
Wow. That's powerful. Well, we are kind of winding down here, Bob. This could go on forever. I'm really enjoying this conversation, and your book is very powerful, and I've enjoyed it. And as I said, I use it in my work. What else should I have asked you that I didn't ask you that you want to share with our listeners?
I think you've done a great job. I think you sorted through, you know, the possibilities and pulled out some good stuff. Obviously, we could go on and on, but I don't think, you know, at the moment. Oh, maybe one thing,
okay.
Maybe just one thing more. And I ran across this, interestingly enough, this very morning. I was out in one of my old addictions, I guess you could say, are used bookstores. And so I was in Rodney's this morning, and I happened across a book by Richard Bach, the man who wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
Oh, sure.
And this is a book he wrote called Illusions. It was about the Messiah coming and what it was like. The Messiah arrives, by the way, in this case, in Indiana. And he says, here is a test, he said, to find out whether your mission on earth is finished. And he says, if you're alive, it isn't. So I would say, keep on living life to the full.
Oh, I love that. Well, that I'll tell you, Bob, this is wonderful. And I guess what I would say is I want to reinforce the whole idea of, you know, we should be seekers. It's about the questions. I love this whole idea of waking up and getting rid of illusions and never being at the mercy of people, events, things, and discovering the gem inside ourselves. And if we do this, then the rest of life can be the best of life.
Yes. And we will enlighten other people. We will bring a ray of sunshine into people's lives. We will bring in, and they will find a more hopeful life probably within themselves. If we can do this ourselves, we will be better for the community at large.
Well, thank you so much. And it was a gift to meet you at the last Saging Conference. I plan to go to the next one, which I'm kind of on the planning committee for, so it won't be this year, it'll be next year. But thank you again. I'm very grateful, and hopefully in the future I can interview Carol.
I think you ought to, and I think that would be a wonderful interview as well.
Okay. Thank you very much, Bob.
Thank you, Jan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.